Yeah, and I think that that's a really important point, isn't it? That it's the experience, but the right experience in the right place and with the right team, and that is going to change in each jurisdiction. You might have a team that's great in one jurisdiction, but they've not actually got the on-the-ground experience in another jurisdiction, and being able to bring all that together is really important. But I want to come back to something that Ronan sort of mentioned, which was really around the change that is happening in terms of the size of the kit that's involved, and because of the lead times, because of the stresses on those providers, you've got to sometimes go down an alternative route for the procurement of some of your kit, etc. So with that in mind, how do you ensure that the projects stay both within budget, but also that you've still got those high standards of quality and efficiency that, of course, are now, being demanded by the industry?
So I guess a lot of the clients we work with would have their approved vendor list, I suppose, as a first pass, right? So that's probably there in place. But what we try to do is test the program, and we do that. We also have an OFCI type of a process. It's like a how to, all the different milestones, from the names from FAP to site acceptance test. That's all fine, but there's a number of multiple of other stages through it. So we kind of test that with some of the suppliers that are mentioned. We know from working across the sectors and the regions, I should say, of who is busy and who is not. And we kind of test that then to see. And obviously there is early engagement with those vendors. So that's one of the first things we do. I guess what we've also learned is we would have worked with numerous different suppliers. That's, the benefit of working in different countries and who may have capacity. So we can add that to the table where we kind of stress test from a program perspective. And that's, there's a certain number of suppliers are kind of, supplying most of the projects across Europe. So it's not as if there is hundreds to pick from. It's still a small pool, but and then there's some projects, as we know, are getting cancelled and may have some, gap in their production schedule. So it's a little bit of knowledge, really. A lot of it is probably the key thing, and doing our own stress tests.
Yeah, just to add to that, I suppose from a procurement perspective, what we're noticing as well, Barry, is because the projects are so large now, well, you can go construction manager, we have multiple contractors. But what we're seeing a lot now is a lot of the GC1 and GC2. So your GC1 will come in and do your shed basically, and your landscaping and your civils and structural. And then you'd have a separate GC2 who will come in then and do an M&E and the whitewall, the fit out basically. And you might have a mix of the GC2 might be a JV between a whitewall contractor and an M&E contractor. And then there's numerous ways you can slice and dice that. But I suppose, again, putting my biased de-risk cost hat on and kind of touching on what you do, Barry, on a contractual perspective and a legal perspective, like normally you'd have GC1 on a contract, and then GC2 comes in, and there can be gaps in terms of scope, in terms of, well, GC1 was supposed to do that, GC2 was supposed to do that. And one thing we recommend is rather than having your traditional where your GC2 is like a nominated subcontractor, you might try and get your GC2 to be a named domestic contractor to GC1. So then you have a single point of risk. So they see your GC1 looks after the whole logistics of the site, obviously built the shed, did the civils, the structure, but looks after all the welfare facilities. And then your GC2 slides in under that contractor. And then you just have a single point of risk. Now, that doesn't work in all cases, depending on program, but Ronan, if there's no overlap, say if it was separate. But, I suppose that's an example of the way you can slice and dice things from a procurement perspective to mitigate the risk for the client. For example, having a single point of risk.
Yeah, and we're definitely seeing that in terms of the differing approaches and splitting up the contracts. And it makes sense to do, as you say, from a risk perspective, although it does, as you've alluded to, introduce other risks that you then have to manage. So look, I mean, data centers is all about technology, right? And we're in the age of AI, and it's just starting, and that's driving all our businesses forward. and having massive impact on the data center sector, the size, the power requirements, etc. But rather than delving into that, I kind of like to hear to what extent is that evolution in technology helping you in your day to day? How are you using the new technology that we're seeing come out?
So I suppose there's numerous different platforms. We are all familiar with some of the names of them. I suppose from my perspective, we use it for different reasons, Barry. So I suppose when we're brought in very early doors from a due diligence perspective on site acquisition, we kind of look at some of the main headings, which would be, you know, the local ecology, different things. So we can kind of put our scope in, and it can help us from a local permitting perspective, kind of do some of the low level review of it. And then what we look at it, basically, it's like for me at the moment, it's more like an assistant as opposed to the answer. It's not, it's really like it does some of the groundwork. It's to be reviewed. So from permitting, things like that, we can look at it from ground conditions, that type of stuff, nesting birds, you know, so on and so forth. It could got to do with power, any of the recent conditions if there was on a permit. So we can look at, does a very initial review. It can do from design team's perspective. We obviously would write a scope of services, and we're trying to compare apples with apples and make sure. So it does some of the kind of, and then it has to be reviewed and assessed into the detail, but does some of that stuff. From in terms of program, there's numerous tools we're using at the moment. So like some of the projects we're working on, there's up to 10,000 tasks. And if you're trying to do program assessments regularly, that's a hard task to do for any individual. So that type of stuff, making sure the logic still works, the critical path items, you know, so that's where it's really useful for us. I think what it does then is it kind of spits out some information, and you still have to review it. So it doesn't take away what we have to do. It probably frees us up to spend more time on the actual really important stuff rather than getting stuck into the absolute weeds. So that's where it's really helpful for us at the moment. And look, I think if you ask me this time next year, I might have a very different answer, because it keeps evolving. And look, it's an exciting journey that we're all on at the moment. And I think the ones that embrace this are the ones who are going to really see the fruits of it.
Yeah, I suppose just to add to that, Larry, like from a company perspective, we invest heavily in tech and IT. So this AI piece is something we're very excited about. In terms of us internally, what we're seeing is helping us. So we have our own internal database, which we call FASA, which is Irish for knowledge. And basically that's a database where we plug in everything in terms of the building a data centers, the cost for the various components, the design efficiency of it. So basically you can plug in and go, okay, well, this is a data center. It's in London. This is the range in megawatts. It was built in 2018. So bring it to today's costs. What were the various efficiencies in terms of power usage? And it just spits out a benchmark for you. So we use that. Then we also use, in terms of for the cost management, we use CostX, which is a measuring tool, which feeds into BIM, which is your 3D drawing tool. And then we have AgTech as well, which measures 3D cut and fill civils work. But on top of that, we're finding now that there's AI is coming in as well, where it can help take measurements off drawings. It's not fully evolved there, it's nearly there, but it takes measurements off drawings, or you can talk to it like you would to ChatGPT and go, find a high voltage cable in all the drawings and all the specs and show me where they are, or find white wall in all drawings and all specs that you've loaded onto this platform and take me there. So it's a good sanity check, and it saves hours of having to leaf through various drawings. I'd say it's similar to what you're seeing on the legal side as well in terms of conveyancing. It brings in all these specs and drawing documents and just takes hours and hours out of having to do it physically to check it. So yeah, that's what we're seeing at the minute.
Yeah, and sorry, to round that off is just on the, from a program assessment, I think where it's going from a project management piece is on site, there'll be this, you know, there will be the visual piece where there'll be some type of equipment, you'll walk around site and it will image it, it'll be back against, you know, the BIM model. So it'll also, but obviously from a cost perspective, quantity, but also program assessment piece. So it'll be very much more factual rather than the human interpretation. And particularly when it comes to the services piece, you know, we all can see a facade, right? It's 100% or it's 90%, but it's into the actual services where I think the real value will be.
Great. Yeah, I mean, it's hugely exciting. I think there's obviously a lot of fear around the jobs it might cost, but what I'm hearing you say is really it's freeing you up to do the value add piece much more, which is really where we see it as well, that the, you know, it's giving us more time to focus on the value add, and it's only going to get better, which is great. Look, I'm conscious of time, but there is one more question I want to ask you before we go, and the reason I want to ask it is because for as long as I've been involved in the data center space, this is a question I get asked by, particularly on the funding and financing side, and I think it's even more a concern now than it used to be. So really interested in your views on it. And it's with the speed of change that's happening in on the physical technology side, rather than just the software side, there is this increasing concern that data centers are becoming obsolete. And so how do you, you know, we've talked about the time it takes to deliver these from, right, I've now got my power, I've got my permitting, and I need to build the thing. And actually, you're starting 3 years before that often on these sites. How do you manage the risk of delivering a data center, so getting to commissioning, and it's obsolete at the point of energization, at the point of commissioning? What do you do to manage that risk?
Okay, I'll go first on this one, Barry. I suppose I was stating the obvious. The first thing is, again, if you're a colo developer and you're agreeing with a tenant up front, then there's a scope that you've agreed to, so that's delivered. So, you know, you're covered that way in terms of that's clear what you're to deliver. But again, you're right in terms of as these things are getting built, technology is changing. Now, the good news is, in our opinion, is how construction is really, especially in data centers, at the forefront of it in terms of advancing technology and moving ahead of general construction in the sense of modularization. So for example, let's just say you have a data center, which is effectively, we call it a shed. So that's your box. So everything needs to be built inside that, your UPS, your power pod, all that. But that's now all on the outside. So that's all plugged in to the outside of the buildings in these power pods. So your space in the building is freed up. So in terms of things changing as you go along, at least those changes can now be done from the outside instead of inside the building, which affects everything. So that's a tick. The other piece then is the space that used to take up racks is going to get smaller. Even though we know now that racks, like, you know, they used to be 7 kilowatt racks, it's now 15, 20, 30. Then last year there was talk, oh, we're going to get 100 kilowatt racks. And even as late as the last few weeks, there was NVIDIA talk, and it was suggested that racks are going to go up to 600 kilowatts. So the power is going to supply fewer racks, which take smaller space, but are going to generate more heat. So what's going to happen then is you're going to have safety with six. You might have a section in your data center that is the 600 kilowatt racks, where you're going to have, for example, fan walls. Your IEC units are going to have to be more concentrated in that area, and your liquid cooling will have to be more intense. But I think because there's so much happening outside the box where you plug and play, it just makes it a bit easier to take on these changes internally because of the modular way that data centers have been built now, as opposed to the old traditional way. I just think it's more, I suppose for want of a better analogy, it's more like a Lego piece now than it used to be, which makes it easier to add and subtract various elements in the building. I don't know what you think, Ronan.
Yeah, just a slightly different take on it would be, I suppose, with the whole AI piece, the liquid cooling, it's probably future-proofing that as in designing. We would see that at the moment in some of the projects I'm working on, and it's the reconfiguration of the, you know, the cooling systems and how that all works. The unregulated sector now is going to be regulated, and it's considering that, how that, what does that mean? And also, I suppose, that the little bit about the ESG, generally speaking, you know, what does that mean, and the design of that, and I suppose that's really it. I suppose to summarize that, you've got the AI piece, liquid cooling. You've got the regulations and the permitting that's going to be much more onerous. And that's the last bit is about the, you know, the PUE, ESG, all that type of stuff as well, to add to what Anthony just mentioned.
So I'm sort of hearing on the positive side, data center construction has evolved to allow for a more Lego-based approach. And that's a really good description, which means that actually it's easier to replace, to upgrade, which is really good. But there are clearly challenges that will remain. And hopefully that modular approach will allow those challenges to be met head on successfully. And the data centers can evolve. Thank you. Fascinating. I suspect that we could actually go on for quite a lot longer. But thank you both very much for your time. It's been a really, really fascinating discussion, and look forward to having similar discussions with you in the future.
Great stuff, Barry. Thanks very much for that. Thanks, Barry. Take care.
Well, that is it for this episode of Data Dive, Navigating Data Centers with Simmons. It remains clear that the data center market will continue to evolve rapidly over the coming years, and this will inevitably present legal challenges to businesses in multiple jurisdictions. Simmons & Simmons is well placed with deep industry expertise and credibility, working with data centers and cloud technology providers and customers. If you have any queries or legal needs in this field, then our dedicated data center team are on hand to discuss your specific queries and would be delighted to assist. Please do get in touch. Thanks for listening, and until next time, goodbye.